Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to the March 21st VC Edu Task Force call. Today our topic is going to be on identity and education credentials. So I'm going to go through some of the announcements and boilerplate stuff that we always start these meetings with. The first one to note is the IP note. Know that anyone can participate in these calls, but any substantive contributions, you have to be a member. To do those, you have to be members of the CCG with full IPR agreements. And you can read more about this at this link that I'll put in the chat now. And call notes, all of these meetings are recorded. We do our best with our infrastructure to record them all and then also have a transcription of the meeting minutes. So you will see in the chat that there's an auto transcriber that is recording what I'm saying right now. What you can do while we're taking these notes is if you see something and the transcriber is, has really flubbed up pretty badly, you can do a substitution in the chat. That'll be very helpful in publishing the minutes. And that would look something like this, where you do an S, a forward slash. I'm just going to make up one right now that doesn't exist. But the middle between the brackets is the word you want to replace and then the replacement. We do use queues in these calls. So instead of just speaking out, please put yourself in the queue. You can do this by typing Q plus. If you know what something about you're going to say, you can say Q plus plus topic. And then you can also remove yourself from the queue. The Q minus. Okay. Next, number three. Let's do some introductions and reintroductions. Is there anybody in the call who's new today that would like to introduce themselves? I see a lot of familiar faces, but if there's someone who would like to introduce themselves or reintroduce themselves and give us an update what you're working on, here's an opportunity to do so.
Hi, I'm Deepak Kulkarni. I work for ASU and also work for the Pocket Initiative that you might be familiar with. I'm a project manager with the team. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for introducing yourself, Deepak. Okay, anybody else? Okay, our next part is announcements and reminders. So I have two on my list. One is for tomorrow's CCG call. TLDR for that is that John Gleason, Dominic Marino from Storage will give an overview of decentralized cloud object storage, which has emerged from the same ethos as the decentralized identity community. They will discuss their edge access management features and have a discussion around using SSI identity with decentralized storage. And if that sounds interesting to you, the link to the agenda and the connection info is going to be in the chat right now. There you go. Also on April 26th through April 28th is the Internet Identity Workshop. This is being held at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California. I am actually, the link is in the chat. I'm actually attending this year. It's the first conference I've attended in over 2 years in person, so I'm really looking forward to it. If you can make it, I suggest that you go because you will get to spend some time with the people who have been thinking about identity for a really long time, and it's a great opportunity to learn and wrap your head around some of these concepts that get really challenging at times. Okay, let me see if there's anyone in the queue right now. Does anyone else have any other announcements that they would like to make before we get started on today's topic? Kalia, you're in the queue.
Hi. Thanks for sharing about IAW. And people should also know that if accessibility is an issue over price, you can come and talk to us about that. We're really committed to opening it up. I have another event that people might be interested in called Mitigating Harms on Web3, happening April 1. If I'm on my phone, so it's hard to put it into chat. If you search on Eventbrite for mitigating harms in Web3, it'll come up. And it's, 5 hours on April 1, depending what time zone you're on.
I think I found it. I'm going to put it in the chat right now.
Thanks.
Sure.
And I just have one more thing. It's kind of an aside. I'm working with the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee on getting some legislation passed in California to create a trust framework and a pilot project within education. So if there's anybody in this group based in California interested in helping say something to your legislators about this, I'd love to connect.
Thanks, Kalia. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
I think email Kalia@identitywoman.net.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And then Deb Everhart, you posted the Open Badges Summit call for proposals in the chat. That is great. That is on August 1st and 2nd in Boulder, Colorado this year. And the deadline to do your proposal is April 15th. I believe that's another one I will be attending. Depending on COVID, of course. Okay. Any other announcements before we get started on our education credential learner identity discussion? Yeah. Put topic in the queue by mistake here. Anyway, I'll fix that after. Okay, let's get rolling here. So a large part of why we're all working in unverifiable credentials is that we believe that individuals should have more control over their data. And this includes deciding what identity is associated with their credentials. And our goal, very soon, hopefully this spring, is to publish a community report that informs the education and training ecosystem with how to issue and verify VCs. And we're narrowing in on this report. And today I would really like to hold a discussion about identity and credentials to help inform the community. So it's a continuing ongoing conversation and it's a moving target right now. But in order to get implementations going, we've landed somewhere. And so we can talk about that. And then talk about what issues may arise, what gaps there are, and any questions that remain. And before we get started, I'm checking the queue there. Dimitri, I was wondering if you could help us out. There's been this long thread going on over the weekend on the CCG email list about OpenID and Chappie and DIDCOM, centralized and versus decentralized. And as someone who's been working on a while and is one of our co-chairs, I was wondering if you can unpack that thread for us and hope to explain the issues that are going on and how it affects what we're doing.
Sure. Thanks, Gary. I can certainly give it a try. It's a long thread and has branched out into many sub-threads. lots of things are being discussed there. The health of the CCG community, the interaction with other standards bodies. But at the heart are a couple of things. At the moment, there are let's say 3 or 4 different protocols that can be used to request. There are 3 or 4 protocols that could be used for verifiable credentials. To request that they're issued, to transport them into the wallet, to verify them, to transfer them between wallets, right? So, a lot of the time in this group, we've started with focusing on the data model. So we have the Verifiable Credentials Working Group has standardized the envelope for us. So what we do in this group is discuss a lot what goes into the envelope, so the data model of the payload itself. And of course, in parallel with that, we need to discuss how do we get it into student wallets? How do we exchange it between our server-to-server systems? How do we verify and all that stuff? So the protocol and the data model question is intertwined. And today, there are three or four different APIs being formed by different standards bodies that can be used to do something with verifiable credentials. So that was thread one. Why are there competing APIs? And what can be done to either converge their development or at least make it clear to users, to implementers, what the strengths and weaknesses of each API is? Why one would choose W3C's VC API or DIFF's Presentation Exchange or OpenID Foundation's self-issued OpenID or the draft of OpenID Connect for verifiable presentations, which is the work that the OpenID Foundation is currently doing. In a certain sense, the fact that there is four different APIs is healthy, right? It means there's a lot of communities have set up and taken notice of verifiable credentials. Means that they're definitely making impact in the world. And all the standards bodies have their own different approach to handling it. So that was issue one. What's the relationship between these? How do we get the standards bodies to communicate, to cross-pollinate, and all that stuff? Thread number two was Manu and several others, including myself, but I can qualify that and answer questions, have stepped forward and said, we understand where OpenID Connect is coming from, but specifically when it comes to using OpenID Connect for general purpose verifiable credentials wallets for consumers, we feel that the versions of the OpenID Connect protocol tailored to work with verifiable credentials are in danger of exerting a market and technological pressure towards monopoly, towards centralization. Now, I know we use centralization or decentralization as sort of value judgments a lot of times in the space, or especially in the Web3 space. But here too, to the point where it becomes apocryphal. So what do we mean by that? What do I personally mean when I say that it exerts a market pressure towards monopoly more so than other protocols? It has to do with the issue of wallet selection and the NASCAR problem, which we'll get into in a second. I also want to preface this, that in the education space, we have kind of a unique approach to this and a unique set of problems. Here's what I mean by that. So, for example, several of the wallets that I work with, for example, the Digital Credentials Consortium DCC wallet, very much uses OpenID Connect for purposes of binding the existing student identity to the decentralized identifier that the student brings, which is the other topic of this call that Gary would like to talk about, right? So we have in our typical university or other school setups, we have existing student information management systems. To put it crudely, we have a database with a student ID in it somewhere. And we're trying to introduce these DIDs, these decentralized identifiers. And one of our challenges as technologists is how do we bridge that gap? How do we on-ramp? How do we bind the new decentralized identifiers, which are controlled by the students or by the individual person? How do we bind those to that user ID in the database that exists on the learning institution server somewhere? And so The reason DCC Wallet uses OpenID Connect is for that binding. It is an excellent mechanism to, when asking for a learner credential to be issued, OpenID Connect provides an excellent mechanism to say, okay, we're going to bind the OpenID Connect user ID Dimitri123 and their email to this decentralized identifier. Here's why I bring this up in the context of the discussion of centralizing pressure or monopolizing pressure of OpenID Connect that exists, that I believe exists in the general purpose world, but less so in our field of education. It has to do with user expectation, and basically it has to do with students are already a captured audience with an account, you know, on their universities or school system. Hold on one second. Let me close the door. Dogs are very excited over here. And I don't have a good view of the chat, so Carrie, please feel free to interrupt if there's questions in chat.
Nothing yet, Dimitri. Thank you. Okay.
So let me describe the general situation, and then we can qualify of what we think is different in the education space. So one of the terms that's thrown about in discussions in the decentralized identity space is a term called the NASCAR problem. And for those of you not in the U.S. or just not familiar with NASCAR, NASCAR is a United States car racing associations. And one of the iconic things of NASCAR is these racing cars are plastered with logos of sponsors. So regardless of the teams, all the big companies sponsor the teams and plaster the logo on the car. So the cars are just, very colorful banner ads, essentially, with dozens, if not hundreds, of different logos. And so the NASCAR problem is with the rise of social login, which has brought a lot of benefits and was intended to bring a lot of decentralization to cross-domain login. What instead you see in sites that support it, a preponderance of logos. So if a site supports social login, you usually present it with an array of buttons that says login with Google, login with Facebook, login with LinkedIn, with GitHub, and as long or as short a list as that particular website decides its users are going to use. So closely related to that is the wallet selection problem. So with current sort of Web 2.0 social login, which incidentally is based on OpenID Connect, we have this problem of, in order to use social login, the user has to select their identity provider. Or essentially, the user has to select their wallet that, where they have an account that manages cryptographic keys for them. So in looking at the list of login with Facebook, login with Google, etc., that right there is the wallet selection step. That is the identity provider selection step. And the NASCAR problem refers to the long list of different logos, different brands with which they can log in, which is reminiscent of the logo plastered racing cars at NASCAR. So why does this happen? The OpenID Connect is the third iteration of the OpenID protocol. It was prefaced by OpenID 1 and OpenID 2. And both OpenID 1 and OpenID 2, as part of the input, required the user to paste in the URL of their identity provider. There was literally a text box and the user logging in was literally required to cut and paste or type in the URL of, so, you know, google.com or facebook.com or their university's webpage, or if they were running WordPress or LiveJournal, something like that, that URL. And as you can probably imagine, but this was actually confirmed by scientific studies paid by Yahoo and others, this is incredibly bad usability. So OpenID sites ran usability studies and discovered that users hate this. This is really confusing. Nobody wants to type in URLs. So what's interesting about OpenID Connect, the third iteration of this protocol, it did learn from this Achilles heel of OpenID that asking people to type in, asking people to perform the wallet selection step, the IDP selection step, is incredibly cumbersome. And OpenID Connect, at its inception, had an answer to this. It was called Webfinger. Thank you, protocol namers. And it allowed the user to type in their email address and through the email address discover the URL of their preferred OpenID Connect provider. So the original design of the OpenID Connect protocol had a solution to the NASCAR problem. It said, okay, we don't want people to type in the URL of their wallet, but users are used to typing in the email. So it's fine. That's an okay ask. And through this other piece of infrastructure that we have, by typing in the email, we're going to let machines discover their preferred wallet provider. Great. This is a fantastic system. Here's the only problem. Here's why instead we have this list of logos, this list of social ID buttons. Webfinger required that email providers support this protocol, this Webfinger protocol. And essentially it all rested on Google was one of the participants in the working group that was coming up with OpenID Connect protocol, and put forth a support towards Webfinger. And the group sort of figured that, okay, if we land Gmail, if Gmail supports this, right, that's a lot of users. And then that'll exert a market pressure for all the other email providers to support this as well. And so, hey, we've solved one of the thorniest problems in identity, which is wallet selection problem. Great. Unfortunately, partway through the process, maybe at the last moment, I wasn't really there, but the Google leadership cut support for Webfinger, so pulled the plug. And because Gmail didn't support it, none of the other major email providers supported, and essentially Webfinger was dead on arrival. So OpenID Connect protocol, which is a fantastic protocol, has lots of innovation, and specifically learned from the mistakes of its predecessors in a lot of ways, plugged a lot of security issues in OpenID 1 and 2, and also in OAuth 2, to which OpenID Connect is a successor. It builds on OAuth 2. So great protocol. But unfortunately, at launch, a major, major part of it was killed. The Webfinger part, the wallet selection part. And so that leads us to the world where we are right now, that obviously we don't want to present a text box to the user to type in the URL. Typing in the email doesn't work because Webfinger never caught on due to market pressures and political pressure. So instead we present the user with a bunch of buttons that contain the URL and contain, So the buttons replace the text box. All right. So all of that digression, How does that relate to what we're here for? How does that relate to decentralized identity and our student wallets, our learner wallets? It relates directly. Unfortunately, most of the things that we want to do, log in with your DID, ask for a credential to be issued into your wallet, all have to do with step one, wallet selection. So we in the VC world have the exact same problem of wallet selection that the OpenID Connect world had. And we have almost the exact same set of fundamental tools to do it with, which is a text box or a list of buttons. And much like the OpenID world where... So let's talk about why that led to centralization. You can see it intuitively. The long list of logos, the long list of social login buttons is annoying to users. And so each website that presents social login, there is usability pressure to present as few buttons as possible, which means everybody picks the top most recognizable wallets, identity providers. Everybody picks Gmail, Facebook, LinkedIn, whatever their particular niche is. And so the